I guess I could start off by explaining how I was first introduced to the poem. My parents were good friends with a priest by the name of Father Bernard Pazluzny, who at that time was in his 70s. He was from a parish in Washington, New Jersey, and very active with the Blue Army and good friends with John Hafford. John Hafford was the founder of the Blue Army, and the Blue Army expanded to a point of having 25 million members that were all dedicated to Fatima Pledge. And he was responsible for starting that movement. He had written 25 books. One book is that wonderful poem in which he speaks of the Bishop of Fatima when he was in Italy with him. And they were looking for bookshops. He wanted to get it in Italian so he could read the Italian version. At that point, he was retired, and John Hafford was like, "What is this book?" And they went back to the bishop's where he was staying, and he had like a lot of books, and it seemed that, the bishop pointed out that he was reading this book, the poem, over and over again, and found that he was reading it more than any other writings, and he was just so absorbed in it. Father Bernard made frequent trips throughout the United States, including New York, California, Florida, New Jersey, Connecticut. In the 1950s, he had traveled with Archbishop Fulton Sheen on several conference tours. He was a pretty popular priest. Now, he was stationed in Washington, New Jersey, but several times a year he would give scholarly-level conferences and lectures, retreats, seminars at our parish hall, which were recorded. When he was at our parish, he would typically stay over my parents' house, and they would celebrate Mass in my parents' home each night that he was out, and he would generally be out for about, sometimes between a month or two. When he was at our parish, and basically the local parishes, two other parishes, would come to the parish hall and listen to his conferences. In 1992, Father Bernard was in town to give a series of conferences. As usual, my parents invited us over for Mass. At that time, I have three sisters, and we were all married, and we all had our own homes. And after Mass, he told us about the topic of his upcoming conference, and that was on the poem of the Man God. I found the whole concept amazing. After the Mass, we had like a coffee and cake, and he went into detail about it. I couldn't attend the conferences because it was during working hours, but my mom was able to. And my mom would always get the various audio cassette tapes of the conferences and pass them off to us. I asked my mom to make sure that she acquired that series. I made it a point to listen to the tapes in the car during my commute to work, and I just simply found it remarkable. My mom purchased all the books, and she also bought me and a few of my sister's sets. I don't think at that time book 5 was translated yet, and that one I had to get later. I had no question as to the authenticity of the revelations. I knew how wise and meticulous Father Bernard was. Now, about 5 years later, in 1997, he was at my parents' again. He asked me about the text-to-speech programs. I was involved in a project using them to help operators recall long operational procedures for gas and steam turbine generators as well as high voltage switching equipment. I'm an engineer. He was interested in using them to read the poem for some people in his various groups who were blind and visually impaired. Several were elderly and found the tiny text in the poem nearly impossible to follow. I provided him with all the necessary software. When he was back in New Jersey, I spent many hours over the phone with him, walking him through the steps of setting the programs up, which he only made it up to about 25% of book one. Around 2002, he asked me to take over the project. His health was starting to fail him, which I tried to do the best I could in my spare time. Presently, I've completed book one, and I'm about 25% into book two. That's done with AT&T text-to-speech voices, and what I was communicated with his various groups, particularly those who were completely blind. And I took some of their advice. Some of the problems with the voices that they lacked inflection. So I took some advice of adding light background music, sound effects, and that seems to help break it up a little bit. I was at some points where I was able to do a lot, but recently I've been busy with work and home, and I haven't been able to do much on it lately. Father Menard passed away in 2005. A few weeks before he died, he reminded me to continue, and I tried to make, and he wanted me to make his audio tapes available online, and that was the Advanced Christianity site where I got several of his conferences, or whatever my mom had purchased, and I put them online in MP3 format, so you could go to that site and download the conferences and or listen to them directly from the site. The most recent thing that I worked on was trying to add, where I could, some human voices. I was working with actress Nancy Ellen Mills, and she was had done some voices for me. And I'll play a little snippet of it in short. Marie Balfour is considered to be one of the most edifying visionaries of our time, in that she recorded the most comprehensive and detailed private revelations of the Gospels ever. The Gospel, as it was revealed to me in Italy and later published in English as the poem of the man God after her death. She was born at Caserta in 1897 and passed away in Viareggio in 1961 and is buried under the altar of the Basilica of the Annunciation in Florence. Her dictations and visions took place during the times of World War II and give a wonderfully detailed account of the lives of Jesus and Mary. Marie Malfatti's visions are the only private revelations to attain a papal order to publish. Her writings were presented to Pope Pius XII in 1947, who examined them for 10 months. His Holiness agreed to a special meeting in 1948 in which he ordered the publishing before three priests, the first one being Father Corrado Verdi, professor of dogmatic and sacramental theology at the Pontifical Marian Theological Faculty of Rome from 1939 onward, later becoming the secretary of the faculty from 1950 to 1959, as well as the consultant to the fathers of the Second Vatican Council. The second priest witness was Father Romaldo M. Migliorini, perfect apostle of Africa, and the third, Andrew M. Chechen, prior of the International College of the Servites of Mary in Rome. These aforementioned priests documented this event, and immediately afterwards were signed testimony. The fact that the Pope did grant this audience was historically documented the next day in February 27, 1948 in El Salvador Romano. Since Marie Balfour's writings encountered several obstacles because the Holy Office was circumnavigated in the church approval process from the Vatican, Cardinal Edward Gagnon wrote that Pope Pius XII's action was the kind of official imprimatur granted before witnesses by the Holy Father in 1948, an official imprimatur of the supreme authority of the Church. Cardinal Edward Gagnon may be the most qualified cardinal to make that kind of judgment. He served as peritus during the Second Vatican Council, that is, the expert theologian, advisor, and consultant. He had a doctorate in theology and taught canon law for 10 years at the Grand Seminary, exceedingly qualified to ascertain if the papal imprimatur and papal order to publish was truly valid. Cardinal Gagnon was so impressed by the poem that later he became an editor for a Valtorta website, motherofallpeoples.com. The Code of Canon Law, Book 2, Part 2, Section 1, Chapter 1, Article 1, gives the Pope full and supreme power over all levels of the Church and free use to exercise this power. Maria Valtorta keeps perfect track of Jesus, Mary, and over 500 additional personalities, none which are in the wrong place at the wrong time. Jesus is appropriately in Jerusalem and Judea for Passover and Pentecost in all four spring seasons, and at the tabernacles in all three fall seasons of his ministry. Jesus transverses the land of Palestine from one end to the other in at least six cycles, some 4,000 miles, ministering in some 350 named locations, including places in Palestine known only to specialized archaeologists. The 10,000 pages of divine revelation were given to our Lord in completely random succession. Maria records the visions in simple bound school notebooks with no corrections in the random order as they were given. On the surface, the complete work appeared to be a well-shuffled deck of cards. Towards the end, Jesus provides the proper sequence, the key, which could not be realized until the mammoth task of typing the manuscript was completed, allowing the individual chapters to be sequenced in a specified succession. When finally placed in the correct progression, the puzzle materializes into a seamless, perfect, flowing chronology. Geologist and mineralogist Dr. Vittorio Tridetti points out that Maria Valcorta described and correctly named several towns and villages that were not even discovered until after her death. David J. Webster posted a landmark 31-page article that fundamentally proved the authenticity of Maria Valcorta's writings. The poem of the Mangon may be the very first private revelation to be scientifically proven genuine. David meticulously and methodically examines Maria Valcorta's strikingly accurate descriptions of the first century Palestine for every piece of topographical evidence. He then compares this evidence with the currently known facts that are only now being proven authentic. Over 39%, or 79 of the 255 geographical sites in Palestine mentioned in the poem were not listed in the 1939 International Standard Bible Encyclopedia, ISBE. That was the only thing that was available from Maria Valcorta. 62 of these 79 were not listed in an 184-page Macmillan Bible Atlas, published in 1968. Maria Valcorta died in 1961. Where did Maria get these names? For a first century eyewitness to include so many obscure and unknown names, of course, would be expected. And most surprising is that these names, obscure and unknown in the 1940s, are only now being proven authentic. 52 of these 62 have no biblical reference whatever, and 17 of these with no biblical reference have either indirectly confirmed as authentic by recent external sources found in the Macmillan Bible Atlas in 1968, it says that she died in 1961, or actually listed in the HarperCollins Atlas of the Bible in 1989. This makes a total of 29 confirmations since the 1939 ISBE Atlas listing. Also among these 62 sites are mentioned the ruins of six ancient Palestinian cities, some corresponding to the modern consensus on location. In addition, Maria's precise descriptions of the natural topography of Palestine from numerous locations and the information about the outside pagan world of that day, including people, places, customs, Greek and Roman mythology, related in the conversations of that day are strikingly correct. I'm going to close with reading a letter. This letter was written into Steve Joss' website. It's from Catherine D'Amato Matteo from Lucenza, Italy, and it's regarding Radio Maria. Radio Maria in Italy has been presenting the works of Maria Valcorta for many years. The nationwide listening public in Italy is about 3 million strong. And both Pope John Paul and Pope Benedict have made very public their support, appreciation, and encouragement for this excellent and punctuously faithful Catholic radio station. There are many cardinals and bishops who participate on a regular basis, and this certainly would not happen if there was just even a hint of something controversial in any of the program offerings. The founder and president of the radio station is Padre Livio Gonzaga. He himself was once skeptical about Maria Valcorta, the works of Maria Valcorta. I don't know what it is, though, that convinced him. Anyhow, Radio Maria is pretty much all over the globe now. And in the course of some 25 years, the Vatican and two popes have found nothing to criticize about the many programs that have been devoted to the works of Maria Valcorta. Radio Maria is tremendously influential among the faithful, and for this reason, the Vatican for sure keeps a close eye on an attentive ear on the radio's programming. But it must be said that even in the Vatican, Radio Maria is as popular and well-loved as any place in Italy. Thank you.